Hi, this is Jossie and Gregor speaking. We're Ella Baker law interns this summer with the Center for Constitutional Rights. And we're based in Port-au-Prince, Haiti at the Bureau des Avocats Internationaux and Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti.
We are going to speak about a visit we made last week, along with our Haitian, Swedish, and Swiss colleagues at the BAI, to a camp facing an illegal eviction at the hands of the Haitian government.
The camp that we visited is called Silvio Cator Stadium, and it was based in the parking lot of Port-au-Prince's national soccer stadium. It was named as one of the six camps that the Martelly government had slated for eviction in his first 100 days in office. However, his administration has since claimed that the eviction that just took place was outside of the framework of his 100-day plan and was rather under the authority of the mayor of Port-au-Prince. But there are several reasons to think that this eviction does implicate the National Palace and President Martelly. First, the camp committee told BAI that the money they were offered to leave was coming in part from the presidency. Second, there was a heavy presence of national police units during the eviction, as well as private security, many of them heavily armed. Third, as I mentioned, the camp is on the list of camps the president promised to close. And lastly, the president has failed to publicly condemn any of the recent violent and illegal evictions that have been carried out by other actors, including the mayor of Delma. And this last point is really important because the president's inaction has, in effect, encouraged private and municipal actors to continue evicting IDPs from camps rather than protecting them. In fact, a quarter of IDPs are said to currently face the threat of eviction.
On Monday, as the eviction was ongoing, we went to the camp to investigate the situation. When we arrived, we found the chaotic scene of a camp in the process of destruction. Dejected families were standing around the wreckage of their former shelters, gathering their belongings, and trying to figure out where to go next so that they would have somewhere to sleep that night. Residents expressed confusion about what their next step should be and what the government's plans for them were. We saw bulldozers approaching the last remaining shelters and piles of rubble marking what used to be people's homes. There were dozens of agents of the mayor of Port-au-Prince present, and although they did not appear to be helping with the relocation of families, they did follow and photograph BAI staff in a way we feel was calculated to intimidate. We spoke with the camp committee to get a sense of how the eviction had been carried out, whether there had been any meaningful participation by camp residents in the planning of the move, and how residents were feeling about the situation.
Once we'd gathered information at the former IDP camp at Silvio Cator, we walked to the piece of land that's been set aside by the government to absorb only a fraction of the IDPs from Silvio Cator. The relocation site was located in the Bicentenaire section of Port-au-Prince, which is a 15-minute walk from the original site. Not only is this one of the more dangerous neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince, but the IDPs relocating there are entering a situation without any security. For instance, there's no fence or boundary around the camp keeping outsiders from entering the camp. And at this point, we don't believe there are any regular police patrols that have been set up and provided for the camp. In addition, residents are living in tents and makeshift shelters without any locks or way to keep out intruders. Finally, IDPs appeared to be entering a situation where there was a certain amount of resentment directed against them by residents of a neighboring IDP camp. Upon the arrival of the new group of IDPs, some individuals in this neighboring camp expressed anger that they hadn't been consulted on the relocation, as well as the fact that they hadn't received any paid work in the process of the relocation. It does seem plausible that tensions could break out between the new camp and the older camp over jobs and other scarce resources. Further damaging is the fact that hostility between the two camps would prevent solidarity on asserting their rights and mutual vigilance against criminals. When we arrived, we saw that the conditions in the camp were deplorable. There were huge pools of filthy water mixed with garbage at the entrance to the camp, though there was a vehicle beginning to clean up part of the mess. There was also a large empty building standing in the camp, which had around a foot of dirty water inside of it, which could give rise to malaria and is also dangerous in the midst of a cholera epidemic. Furthermore, there were no toilets yet, and there was no access to food, clean water, or showers. We have since learned that several portable toilets have been provided, though these have been inexplicably located on the highway median outside of the camp, so that people have to trek dangerously across the road to get there. We wondered where people would sleep that night, as we only saw 16 tents set up by around 2 p.m. in the afternoon. In addition, these tents, which had been provided by the government, were completely inadequate. They stood around 3 feet tall and probably could fit no more than 3 people inside, while the average family size is a lot larger than that. Also, the tents weren't waterproof. Additionally, we witnessed displaced families receiving little to no assistance in moving all of their belongings from the stadium to their new location and in setting up their shelters again. It seemed that they would have a lot of difficulty lugging their belongings to the new camps through the crowded, poorly paved roads and deep gutters. As of today, we learned that only around 100 families were accommodated in the relocation camp out of more than 500 evicted families from the stadium. We don't know where the other families have ended up, but it is likely that many of them ended up on the street, in another camp, or in a dangerous structure that was left precariously standing by the earthquake.
It seems that evictions of this type will keep occurring in the immediate future, especially if the Martelli government does not speak out against them. IJDH and BAI are joining TransAfrica Forum in launching a No Evictions campaign to shine light on the continuing violations and forced evictions being committed against IDPs in Haiti. The campaign will seek to involve as many partners as possible and to target the government of Haiti, U.S. congressional allies, the Interim Haiti Reconstruction Commission, the media, and the international public. We will keep you posted on how you can help with this campaign.